The Auckland Greens are thinking local and talking to the people with ideas for a better city and a richer future. Every Monday on Green Auckland.
Kia ora, good morning. This is Dave Clendon at Planet FM. And today the topic is sustainability. It's a big word. It's a word that's been around a while. It's often used and I think it's often misused. So this morning I have a guest. We're going to have a wee conversation about what is sustainability. What does it mean in an everyday sense? And particularly, what does it mean for business? My guest has some fairly strong views and some considerable experience as an advocate for sustainability as a key element of a business strategy, and specifically in his area of architecture and the built environment. We know that New Zealanders love their outdoor life. A big part of the attraction of the New Zealand lifestyle is the outdoors. We can get to the bush, to the beach. We like being out there, both those of us who have been here a long time and our newer New Zealanders. But the reality is most of us spend most of our time in the built environment. Most of us, in fact, about 85% of New Zealanders live in the urban environment. And maybe we take it a bit for granted. Perhaps we realise sometimes things are not so good. And my guest today is Jerome Partington, an architect who might have some fairly good ideas about how we can make the built environment better and more sustainable. Jerome was born in the UK, but has lived in New Zealand for quite a number of years. He's a strong advocate for sustainability in a business context, and certainly having trained both as a scientist and as an architecture, some 25 years of experience in architecture and education, but also, dare I say it, unlike some architects, he also has a pretty found sense of practical construction and technology. So I'm pleased to welcome Jerome Partington, the Sustainability Manager for Jazzmac Architect here in Auckland. Kia ora, Jerome.
Kia ora, David.
Tell us a bit about Jazzmacs. They're, I understand, one of the larger practices in New Zealand.
That's right. Jazzmacs been around for over 40 years now, and they cover a wide range of work, focused primarily on architecture, but we also deal with the urban design and landscape, and we do a fair bit of interior design, which is around sort of commercial fit-outs, and we do a great deal of sustainability these days too.
Sure. What is your definition of sustainability, Rome, in a general sense? What does it mean when you talk about sustainability?
There's quite a few different ways of looking at it, but I suppose at the heart of it, it's a people's issue. It's how do we live on this planet? And the environment itself is not too fussed. You know, it's people and our behaviours that impact on the environment and how we organise ourselves as society that's really at the heart of sustainability. And I think if we take a huge step back and we think about what it is we're dealing with, then we're probably talking about how the Earth has evolved over a huge amount of time to create a very healthy, life-enhancing and life-giving place for us humans to live. And because of the way we organize ourselves and the way we do business and the way we sort of live our lives, we're trashing it at a really fast rate. In fact, nearly every major ecosystem or biosystem component on this planet is stressed and probably going downhill as we speak.
Yes, I recall a Stern report a few years ago gave some fairly frightening numbers and statistics about ecosystem services, the extent to which most of those services which are provided for free to us to live, to survive and to thrive seem to be heading all in the wrong direction.
Yeah, we basically take them for granted. Fresh air, food, materials, the kind of dealing with carbon in the atmosphere, all that kind of stuff, we take it for granted. And we think it's an unlimited resource, and so we just get on with our sort of current way of living, and it's starting to bite back.
Yes, and as you say, it's to our cost, isn't it, if we degrade this planet where we live?
So I was just going to say that, so to define sustainability, it's probably around how do we sustain our relationship on this planet, on this Earth, locally, globally? How do we get on with living on it in a way that's to our benefit and to the health of the ecosystem that we absolutely rely on.
Which is ultimately serving our own ends, clearly.
That's
too.
That's right.
Sure. Yes, I guess when a lot of people think about sustainability, it's they're perhaps thinking more in terms of conservation, managing the environment. Where does that fit into a business context? Why do businesses or business people need to be thinking about this?
Well, there's a number of reasons, David. I think primarily it's that the way we do stuff now is pretty harmful, pretty damaging, and our generally accepted standards are pretty low, for instance, around building. And so we want to, you know, essentially we want to stop doing that harm. We want our building, say our built environment or business, to be doing things or offering goods and services that are valuable to us, but not causing any damage at the same time. And I suppose at the other end of the spectrum, there's the opportunity to actually do business that's good for the planet, actually enhances the capacity of the planet to support life and support our enjoyment of life.
Yeah, and that is unique, you think, to the particular profession, industry you're in, or can any business head down that sustainability track?
Look, I think any business can, for a number of reasons. I think the built environment and architecture is particularly, you know, it's a real area of focus because we deal with so many resources, and we're sculpting and designing that environment that we're living, working and playing in. So there's a particular focus on the built environment, but essentially any business that's offering goods and services needs to do that in within the constraints of the planet. And there's a bit of, you know, a lot of focus is around small improvements and changes and the incremental changes from, you know, we're going to save water, use less energy, drive less kilometres for an average business. That's all good, you know, that's cost savings, that's good performance, it's really good awareness raising. But that's not sort of getting to the heart of the matter, and it doesn't start to help us really understand the constraints fully, which then might drive completely new products and services that we know we need, but we're not yet delivering. So I think businesses can do it in two ways. They can start the journey by doing some sort of small incremental shifts, and then they can start looking at, well, how do we get a step change? How do we do things completely differently that starts to offer back more than we take?
Okay, yes, and hopefully those small incremental initial steps might also save businesses some money, which is always a good thing to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, Jesmex is, we kind of call it the housekeeping, and that's part of my job there, to green the office and the business as opposed to the designs that we do. And we've had lots of fun doing that. We've had lots of success. We've, you know, over 4 or 5 years, we've reduced our waste from maybe 2,400 litres a week to less than 600 litres a week. We've got a 12-pack of these new Hungry Bins down in the car park, munching through all our organic waste.
Great.
And you know, everything else goes into the recycling. So, you know, it's been useful. It's controlled our costs in that particular area. And what's been really interesting is that it's because we've sort of lived it, if you like. We've designed it and put it into our own office. And we've gained that understanding, and now we can share that with our clients. So it's been a double benefit to Jesmex, and that applies to a lot of areas around our office in terms of energy, water, waste, staff travel. Yeah,
sure. So clearly, there's a commitment there. They've appointed you to the unique position of sustainability manager. What was the motive behind that? Was it consumer driven? Was it from the belief systems of the principals? What was it?
A mixture of quite a few factors, David. I think, there's different interest in sustainability and green design, and generally, you know, architects are professionals. They're well trained. They have an awareness of what's going on around them. I think there was also the potential to differentiate ourselves in the market, you know, to get a better, clearer understanding, and we could see that the market was going in that direction with the founding of the Green Building Council, New Zealand Green Building Council, 5 or 6 years ago. And so, it was a kind of, it was also a driver from myself as well. You know, I could see the huge potential there. And so there was that challenge to sort of present them with a route forward that would have greater benefits than not doing it effectively.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, very good, yeah. In terms of what contribution can a particular profession of architecture and building design and built environment design, what's the major contribution you can make to a more sustainable city in Auckland, for example? Where would you score Auckland City currently in terms of sustainability?
Ooh.
Tough question.
I just saw some text around the long-term plan for Auckland the other day, and I saw two figures, and I'm not quite sure where I saw them, but you know, 97% of the transport funding was to be shared between public transport and the roads, and 3% for cycling and walking. And at the end of the day, you know, what drives fitness, well-being, communities, you know, it's... And I walk a fair bit around the city, and it's actually really difficult. You know, the roads take precedence, and a lot of the places aren't that pleasant to hang around, waiting to cross intersections. And, you know, I'd like to see that figure more like 20% for cycling and walking, and then a good chunk for transport. And then perhaps we could just maintain the roads we've got. Yes. That would be enough.
Yes, my colleague Julianne Genter has been quite vocal on that issue about getting more investment in walking and passive transport, cycling, and as well as then public transport. And certainly we need to accommodate vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
But maybe the balance is wrong. Mm.
I think getting back to architecture, though, architects have two key things that are real positive advantages. So by their nature, they're trained to be visionaries. They have to imagine the future and they have to work out how they're going to create that future. And that's a pretty rare sort of skill amongst the professionals, if you like. And the other key part of the architect's role is to actually coordinate all the other consultants, the engineers, the designers, the project managers, so that we have a coherent sort of solution to the problem. And that coordination is a really key step on towards where we're starting to move to around collaboration. And a lot of the advanced green buildings and green environments that are being developed around the world, and certainly we're lagging behind there, are delivered using integrated design or integrated sustainable design. And that's much more about putting the goals of the project, the sustainable goals of the project, on the table early, having everybody around that table talking, discussing, understanding what they mean, and then collectively or collaboratively working to deliver those goals. Because the conventional design process is a bit more linear and tends to, you know, the wheels fall off in terms of sustainability. We don't get the outcomes we're looking for. We think we're going down the right road. And integrated design has been much more effective in getting to the right outcomes. And so architects have that skill of collaboration and coordination along with being visionary. So they're really key people to creating a future.
You one that we're going to aspire to and not just suffer. Yeah.
That's right.
It seems to me, I have to say, and as a challenge to you perhaps as an architect, I have seen examples of buildings, I'm sure we all have, that seem to have no relationship to the place where they're built. It seems to me some architects historically perhaps have looked at the site from the outside in, have built the building they wanted to build without much reference to the surrounding environment. Is that what you're talking about, a more integrative approach?
No, in there's two things there. Integrated sustainable design is physically the process, a new process of design where we're working together to share those common goals around perhaps zero energy for the building or zero water or ensuring that occupant comfort it works using natural ventilation under all conditions, all seasons. So that's very much about the process that we're driving and organizing and managing the design team, because design is complex. You know, you have to define that problem and then work out how to solve it. And by defining it in sustainability terms right at the beginning, early, we can make huge impacts in the ongoing performance of the building. So we can actually eliminate perhaps heating and ventilation from a building by actually putting thermal mass inside it to keep it cooler. But for instance, going back to your question, making the building of the place itself by actually putting the, making sure that the building faces the sun to capture it in winter and shading
which
it in.
Which so many of our homes don't, I guess.
That's right. And shading it in summer so it doesn't get too hot. Making sure we get daylight to all the spaces so we don't need to turn the lights on. Making sure that outdoor areas are shaded from the harsh sun in New Zealand. So there is a real, you know, link between how we design on the ground, in the city, how we address the environmental constraints, the sun, wind, rain, as well as the sustainability constraints. And integrated design starts to allow us to do that really effectively.
Okay. Clearly, when people engage architects, they expect to get a bill at the end. And we do hear a criticism occasionally that these new green building sustainable approaches are simply adding costs that people can't carry. Do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I do.
I'm sure. Surprise there.
I, you know, if I step back and I look at New Zealand, I think we've been on a race to the bottom. We've been on a race to cheap buildings, cheap fees, cheap quality, and with no sense of what's good for the users, no sense of what's good for the environment, society, or the cities. And that has been incredibly destructive and puts a long-term cost onto our society. So how do you start going around demonstrating the value of what you're going to, you know, you're basically going to have to think in a different way, design in a different way, and deliver a different product. So there's a huge amount of education to be done, and there's some basic standards to be adhered to, and that's kind of where the Green Building Council has been really effective and really valuable. We can now have these conversations. But in terms of cost, well, it's really interesting. Yeah, we can spend more money if you want to, or we can actually deliver sustainability for less money, but by prioritizing what the really important parts of that building are. Now, for instance, some of the green certified, you know, the Green Star buildings in Auckland, they might have cost 5 to 8% more for a 5-star green building than building code. But they're much more comfortable. They use less energy. They use less water. And so there's a long-term view there. But really, the biggest value is in the comfort and the happiness of the people who are using that building. And if they are, in fact, in that state, you know, they like to go to work, that's a huge productivity gain for the company that's using that building. So that's a real benefit. That's much bigger than the savings of energy and water. On the other hand, we've recently finished two stages of a large West Auckland school. And because it's a rebuild, whereas all new schools in New Zealand get extra budget for becoming Green Star certified, because it's a rebuild, we didn't get that extra budget. But we have designed the envelope, and that's the walls and the roof and the floor of the building, to be much, much more energy efficient than even this Green Star 5 building. So we did that for less budget. So we focused on the priority. You can never improve the envelope later. So get that right on day one, and then you can add your solar panels and your water tanks, et cetera, as you like at later time. So there is an issue. You know, New Zealand doesn't have fantastic building budgets, and so we have to reprioritize where we spend that money. And it's not so difficult to do. And then that good early decision making allows us to save money and to actually improve those buildings later on as technologies become cheaper and we can add them in. As long as we've had that sort of foresight and we know what our vision is that we're trying to achieve.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, I've heard it said that New Zealanders, when they're building or renovating their homes, tend to focus more on the quality of the taps or the furnishings rather than getting, as you say, that basic envelope right and future-proofing their home.
Well, just as a sort of guide, I mean, JazzMax don't actually do a lot of residential architecture. We do some urban design, and we're doing a lot of work around how to... there's a talk about intensification in Auckland City. I think that's really the wrong way of looking at it. We actually want to look at how we create better quality of life in the city. And that often comes if you look at European cities or other successful cities. Yes, there are more people living there, but the quality of the services and the spaces are much, much higher, and they're walkable neighbourhoods, and they're pleasant places to be. And so it's not a question of density versus low density. It's actually a question of what makes a really high quality space. But in terms of we do like our homes, and we like to spend on the bells and whistles. But one of the green building standards that I've been looking at is called the Living Building Challenge, and it is a standard for restorative buildings. And the author of that, the Living Building Challenge, basically makes the point that for the average, for an average house, the cost of the double garage is the cost that it takes to make it a restorative building. So leave off your double garage, add your solar PVs, your water tanks, your efficient lighting, and all those other attributes, and it's a very healthy daylit building too, with no toxic materials in it. So for the simple cost of delaying your double garage for a few years, you can actually have a zero energy home and a zero water home. I mean, we make our choices, and so really we need just a bit more education out there and understanding so that people can make better choices about what and how they want to live in their homes.
Oh, interesting. Yes, I would have imagined it would be a great deal more of a margin to install all of those attributes of a home that will pay back over a very long time.
Yeah, yes. No, yeah. The technology is getting cheaper and power is getting more and more expensive, and
certainly
we're not seeing that going backwards at all. So there's a real incentive to get on and to do really high quality sustainable homes, which will last, you know, last for 100 years rather than thinking about the 2-3 year return.
Mm. In terms of commercial buildings and our built environment, our city environments, what are the barriers to better building, whether it be new or renovations of existing? What's stopping people? Is it simply education, or is it more substantial than that?
I think business as usual is a really strong paradigm. Just getting on, we did it yesterday, it worked, we're going to carry on doing it. And I think, you know, I step back and I look at the New Zealand construction industry, and they've taken a huge step in terms of the last 5 or 6 years, and we can have conversations. And the Green Building Council has definitely squared that circle between the tenants, the developers, the designers and the builders. But how do we move forward? There's just, it's people, we've still got a lot of the old sort of delivery infrastructure, if you like. We still separate out the capital costs from the operating costs of buildings. Mm. We still, we have an incredibly low level of quality and compliance in our building code that could easily drive much, much better solutions. We've not got a lot of, I don't necessarily think we need incentives from government, but we definitely need to tighten up the constraints, because as I've said before, you know, being able to deliver a school for cheaper, but to a high performance out in West Auckland, that says to me that actually we're just not thinking the right way. We're not setting ourselves the right goals. And a couple of commercial buildings, we're working on an interesting commercial building for a biotech company down in Hamilton, and also some offices and a larger assembly for an iwi down in Whakatane. And both those buildings are aspiring to use the Living Building Challenge to drive the design outcomes. Now, admittedly, they're rural, but both of those buildings have had no problem achieving net zero water. That means they're not connected to the town supply, and they're treating all their own water waste on site and recycling that water for use in the toilets. And likewise, having the goal of net zero energy has driven us from what's probably a Jazmax best on the NZI building down in Auckland at 87 kilowatt hours per square meter per year. We're looking at sort of the 60-65 for the biotech company. That's a drop of about 25%, and then heading down to 50 for the iwi building. So if we set these goals and these constraints and we say, hey, these are the challenges and these are the opportunities, then we start getting stuck in. And my design teams have just been, you know, reveling in it, basically.
Interesting. Yes, I've often heard it said that good design is generated by problems, by limits, by boundaries, saying you've got to achieve this on this really difficult site or under these conditions. And that would seem to be an example of that.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's like, you know, being sustainable is about understanding what those constraints are, what the limits are, and then turning those around and using them to drive your decision making. And you come out with a different answer. We're still in business. We're still making buildings or offering services to people who need them, but we're offering much smarter solutions that are good for us and good for the environment too.
Excellent. Yeah. And it's interesting, I think, that I'm assuming those two buildings you mentioned are owner-occupied, if you like, so that people putting up the capital cost are also going to enjoy the reduced ongoing expenditure of running the building.
Yeah, that is right. And what's been missing a little bit from New Zealand, and hopefully will be coming in later this year, is a building performance tool, which will allow us to measure how, you know, in a basic way, how well our buildings perform in terms of water, energy, and the comfort of the occupants. Now, in Australia, that's mandatory. And when your lease for lease sign goes up, it tells you how many stars out of 5 your building's achieving. And you know where the tenants go. They go to the high-star buildings. They want performance. And so that kind of thing can drive a real change. And I think we'll start to, you know, when that tool appears and we start using it with a bit of encouragement from, for instance, Auckland Council around their buildings, and then we'll start to see a change. Pretty slow, though.
Well, yes. Sadly, so many things seem to take far too long, don't they? Clearly, the local government and indeed central government have considerable ability to influence some of these outcomes. If you suddenly got your three wishes, what would you want of local government and central governments to advance the improvement in our built environment? What would be some of the key drivers, do you think, that politically that might be achieved?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I'd like to think that our building code would, you know, shift up and we would have to deliver sort of a minimum of what's called 5 green stars as our basic compliance. And that would mean that all buildings are basically healthy, good for the people that are using them, don't waste energy and resources, and provide the basic facilities that allow people to live a bit more sustainably. So that would be a great baseline. The industry would throw its hands up in shock, but the reality is that it's possible to do. And so why wouldn't you? Because we need to build more sustainability into the way that we operate as businesses.
Would the opposition from the industry be about the transition period, or is it simply more deep-rooted than that?
Oh, it would be around first costs and upskilling the industry. So first costs are, you know, you do pay a little bit more to get a better quality building. And although we can build better quality more cheaply, the best time to do it is right at the beginning. So it's worth capturing a bit more of those wins early on.
Sure. Well, that's probably a good point to finish on. And I think we're just about out of time. So we need to get back to first causes, think through this stuff. It's about understanding the priorities, what you want to need out of a building over time, get the design in there and make it work.
Yeah. And I think also there's the opportunity to think about who we are. Are we just chasing the buck, or do we want to leave high quality legacies that are good for people and you know, offer us a better place to live in, giving something back rather than always thinking about what's in it for me. Yeah.
Thanks, Sharon. That's really helpful. We look forward to some of these ideas appearing in what could be a much greener Auckland.
Cheers, David.
So I've been talking to Jerome Partington, Sustainability Manager at JASMAC Architecture, about sustainability and how good design can make our cities greener and better places to live. This is David Clendon for Green Auckland. Look forward to talking to you again next time.
Aotearoa's most populous city could also be its greenest city. Explore ideas for a Green Auckland every Monday at 9:05 a.m. or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/Green Auckland.
Everything's fine. There's a good and bad somewhere in between. Often I feel like we're all navigating blind. Could we get a change of pace to set the scene? We could stay another. And